Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll discuss a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and look into who the Libyan opposition are and what kind of government they are likely to form. Jamshid Choksi joins us. He has an article in Small Wars Journal, Libya's Rebel Leaders and Western Assistance. Then at a time of collapsing tax revenues and concerns over a growing deficit, we'll talk about who are not paying taxes with the nation's leading authority on tax policy, David K. Johnston. He will let us know how and why corporate America is leaving the average taxpayer holding the bag. Then finally, we'll address California's budget impasse with the former Deputy Treasurer of the State of California, Mark Paul, co-author of California Crack Up. Let's now turn to the subject of the Libyan opposition. I'm now joined by Jamshid Choksi, who is Professor of Central Eurasian International and Islamic Studies and is the former director of the Middle East Studies program at Indiana University. He and his wife, Carol Choksi, recently published an essay in Small Wars Journal called Libya's Rebel Leaders and Western Assistance. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jamshid Choksi.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So the conference, of course, is taking place in London today, hosted by the British Prime Minister Cameron and Secretary of State Clinton is there, along with the UN head. I take it, though, that the Arab League representative didn't show up. He sent a deputy. Is that an unfortunate signal to your mind?
Yes, it is a troubling signal because the Arab League was so prominent in requesting us to go in. And once we have gone in, they've been backpedaling, having second thoughts, and now this, shall we say, no-show is not a good sign at all. It seems to indicate that, as not surprising, many of the countries in the Middle East are having second thoughts about all this.
And the representative that is there at the representing the Libyan opposition that I'd like to talk to you about, because you've broken down who they are in this article in Small Wars Journal. Mahmoud Jibril is the envoy to the London talks. Who is he and what's his background?
Well, he is, the Libyan rebels have sort of created an umbrella organization called the National Transitional Committee. And this is the coordinating organization for, shall we say, a very vast and diverse array of anti-Qaddafi opponents, all the way from people on the right to people on the left, all the way from secularists to Islamists. And they decided on a small number of individuals for this transitional committee. Mahmoud Jibril, in fact, was U.S.-trained. I believe he has a Ph.D. from the University of Pittsburgh. But he went back to Libya. He worked for Qaddafi. He was a management and planning expert for Qaddafi, and he now is going to be the rebel prime minister. So he's one of those individuals who, shall we say, was part of the Qaddafi camp that has now switched over.
But most of the senior members of the opposition are former Qaddafi people, his former justice minister being the head of the rebel transitional, or it's called the National Transitional Committee, the NTC. But to me, that's akin to Iraq, where everybody was a member of the Ba'ath Party, or in the Soviet Union, you had to be a member of the Communist Party to get a career going. So do you think we'll make the same mistakes that were made in Iraq by purging the Ba'athists and dismantling the army in that sense, because there is still this lingering idea that somehow the opposition is infiltrated by Al-Qaeda, and of course that is what Qaddafi has been saying all along. And senior NATO commander testified before the U.S. Senate saying there are flickers of Al-Qaeda Hezbollah
so very
presence.
Very interesting term, flickers, yes. Flickers of Al-Qaeda. Now, in terms of the Libyan rebels themselves and their leadership, like I was saying, there are many different leaders, and understandably, a number of them are people who used to be close to Qaddafi. I think the more troubling aspect of those close to Qaddafi is not that we should go around or that the Libyans should purge everyone. That was the mistake in Iraq. You can't purge the entire bureaucracy because then the country stops working. But there's a question of how close to Gaddafi was one. So, for example, one of the members of this National Transitional Committee is a former interior minister. And as we all know, in the third world, interior ministers are usually those who break the bones or have the bones broken on their behalf. So you know, this, there is an aspect that is troubling. There are others who have fallen out with Gaddafi a long time ago, and yet others who had nothing to do with Gaddafi. So, you know, maybe the best hope does lie with this, with the NTC.
And you've described the NTC, the National Transition Committee, at least its military wing, as a kind of Mad Max-style rebel force. Now, yesterday they were poised 20 miles outside of Gaddafi's hometown of Sirte, and today they've been driven back two towns back by Gaddafi's firepower. So this combination of NATO air power and this kind of Mad Max group of people in pickup trucks dressed in jeans and T-shirts.
There you go.
It's not working that well, is it?
No, it's not very promising. Let us keep in mind that until the West moved in, Gaddafi had actually beaten them back all the way back to Benghazi. And the question, of course, you know, it's too late to sort of really go back and assess what we should or shouldn't have done. But, it, you know, the question is raised that, well, maybe if we were going to intervene, whether we should have intervened when the rebels actually were on the upsurge, as opposed to waiting till they were beaten back. Because what we are seeing now is, yes, with our protection, the rebels surge forward, get beaten back, surge forward, get beaten back. And so what we could end up with is a stalemate, ultimately, and one which would be costly to the Libyan people and also costly to NATO.
Well, there's also a possibility, of course, that as Gaddafi's forces expose their artillery and tanks in order to beat back the rebels, they are vulnerable to airstrikes. It's just difficult to know exactly what the overall military calculus is, I take it.
Well, what we do figure is we can, very, very clearly, NATO can demolish anything that Gaddafi puts on the ground or in the air. However, that, you know, that is, shall we say, the sort of more distant strategy we use. It is a lot tougher trying to take out, shall we say, individuals and groups of individuals who may be loyal to Gaddafi. So in other words, his troops who can move into towns and cities and essentially, instill terror on the local populations. And I think that was part of what President Obama was referring to in his speech yesterday when he talked about the terror that's going on in Libya.
Again, I'm speaking with Jamshid Choksi, author of the article in Small Walls Journal, Libya's Rebel Leaders and Western Assistance. Now, on the financial front, the president mentioned this last night, that the 30-plus billion of Gaddafi's treasury that was frozen would be used to help Libyans rebuild their country. I mean, that in itself is amazing, isn't it? That somebody can have over $30 billion sitting in their personal checking account, which is indistinguishable from the Libyan treasury. But
yes, indeed. Yeah, that is troubling. We also know that there was well over a billion, I think $1.5 billion, the equivalent of $1.5 billion, being minted in London. Of Libyan dinars that was going to be sent back that the rebels have now asked for. The problem, of course, with all this is that in order to provide those funds, one does have to have a stable government established in Libya. Otherwise, it would be akin to just handing money out to whoever happens to walk around. So long before any such a reconstruction can be done, we're going to have to try to figure out a stable government, a government that replaces Gaddafi, and a government which, coming back to the point you raised earlier, a government which is not linked to Islamic militants.
But Gaddafi, meanwhile, is burning through a tremendous amount of money because his system is basically a carrot and stick system, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
You know, we either bribe you or we kill you. And that's how he maintains his loyalty. But he's apparently burning through what the IMF estimates is $100 billion in cash,
right?
Which U.S. dollars and $100 billion. That's what he's sitting on in or what he's burning through in his capital, and he's also got $6 billion in gold.
I mean, he wrote about that as well. That he has all this to hand out. It's not just that he has. It's not just cash. He has weapons. And this is the dangerous part of it. He has opened the weapons storehouses. Shall we say it's akin to, shall we say, opening up all the National Guard armories across the U.S. and telling whoever wants to fight for the government to come along and pick up arms. So there's very little control. These weapons are flowing out of the Libyan military depots. And some of them will undoubtedly end up in the hands of very bad people.
So, Jamshid Choksi, again, co-author of the article in Small Wars Journal, Libya's Rebels and Western Assistance. At this conference going on in London, at which the U.S. Secretary, or actually the U.N. The U.S. rep to the U.N. said that they're not ruling out arming the rebels. There have been some talk of looking for a place for Gaddafi to retire to. Apparently the Italians are trying to broker a deal. Apparently some of the sons have sent out feelers that maybe they see the writing on the wall. What's happening there? I mean, there was talk earlier of Venezuela's Hugo Chavez, who incidentally received the Gaddafi International Prize for Human Rights in 2004, that maybe he would take Gaddafi or maybe somebody to the south in the sub-Saharan Chad or somewhere.
Yeah, well, two great questions from you. And the first one, namely trying to arm the rebels, there is weaponry flowing to the rebels from the Egyptian military. The problem with NATO directly arming the rebels is, again, a question of who are these weapons to be given to. One doesn't want to do what the Libyan government is doing, that is, just hand out weapons to whoever happens to come along. So that's the great problem there, partly because while the majority of the rebels certainly are Libyans seeking freedom and representational government and all the rest, there are individuals in this mix of rebels who do have links to Islamic militant organizations. So there are individuals who would have fought the Russians, the Soviets and the Russians in Afghanistan, then fought us in Afghanistan, fought us in Iraq, who went back to Libya, fought Gaddafi, because not all of Libya was completely under Gaddafi's control to begin with, long before this anyway. So it's sort of a motley crew, and one has to be really careful as to who weapons are handed out to.
Well, but the same U.S. European commander, Admiral James Savarese, who testified to the U.S. Senate, who said there are flickers of al-Qaeda and Hezbollah present in the Libyan coalition there. He also said that the opposition leadership appears to be responsible men and women. So
the leadership, by and large, are responsible men and women. The problem with handing out weapons is that it's not those leaders who are firing the weapons. And we should keep in mind that this entire region, Libya, Tunisia, Morocco, has had a problem with a group called Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, which is an Al-Qaeda offshoot for North Africa. So those individuals are there, and they see the problems in Libya as an opportunity to get weapons, to get funds, and to also spread militancy. So it is, shall we say, a very tough balancing act and a tough call for the United States right now.
But I think, wasn't that a part of the calculus of why the U.S. and NATO intervened, was that if they didn't, then al-Qaeda would have the moral victory that the West deserted you and where are your only friends, whereas now, from the news reports you see, is that the rebels are actually very grateful for the help that they're getting from the NATO Air Force.
Undoubtedly, this is, shall we say, a PR victory for us as well. However, let us also keep in mind that we had a similar PR victory when we were arming the Taliban, not the Taliban, but the precursors of the Taliban, and the various Afghan freedom fighters against the Soviets and the Russians. And that PR value faded very quickly, and we ended up with a very large problem there. So, you know, these are dicey situations which can go one way or the other. And I think part of it links up to your second question, that is, what will happen or how can Gaddafi be moved out? And that I think, is a very complicated matter. It would have been easy at the beginning of the rebellion, but now with so much blood on Gaddafi's hands, it is hard to see where he could go and live out his life. It would be hard to see the Saudis accept him. Sub-Saharan Africa, perhaps, but sub-Saharan African states are not necessarily stable themselves. And, okay, so if he does end up in Venezuela, well, we'll have him in our backyard. And what happens if and when Chavez moves out of office? So I think, you know, there are a lot of complications there. And Gaddafi has never shown himself to be someone who can be trusted to keep a commitment. So even if he agrees to leave, you know, we don't know what will happen, whether he really will do so, just like he's agreed to several ceasefires and violated all of them.
Well, it's difficult to I always had the impression that, at least since the NATO intervention, that it was just a matter of time, and that it's hard to believe that he really does have much support in that country, given that he and his son, his spoiled sons, have plundered the place. And I understand the tribal connections, and the Gaddafi tribe centered around Sirte. But I understand that one of the fellows that's also you've done an analysis of here in your article in Small Wars Journal, who seems to be the military leader, General Omar al-Hariri, who was an opponent of Gaddafi, who was imprisoned for 15 years. He's apparently working on another tribe, that actually a predominant tribe in Sirte. So what do you know about the tribal politics and winning, you know, in other words, peeling off Gaddafi's diminishing tribal support?
The National Transitional Committee, in fact, has a website where they which they update with video feeds of tribal leaders pledging allegiance to the National Transitional Committee and denouncing Gaddafi. I think it is correct to say that perhaps, you know, as the days and weeks go by, it is very likely that the support will peel away from Gaddafi as he runs out of funds and he runs out of weapons. But when that happens, irrespective of Gaddafi's actual fate, whether, you know, whether he gets killed by the mob or whether he is taken out of the country, whether he faces criminal indictments, irrespective of that, the larger issue is how does one, shall we say, stabilize Libya after this? And that's, shall I say, the biggest challenge that the NTC and NATO are going to face, because you're going to have a country where there's been a great deal of violence, a vast amount of weaponry scattered around, and also a lot of cash that has been handed out by Gaddafi. So it'll be a volatile mix, and it's also unclear, in, you know, with all this fighting, whether these tribal groups will ultimately unite behind a new national government. I think we're looking at a great number of unknowns laying ahead.
Well, it would seem, though, that this new government will be very beholden to the European powers who helped them defeat Gaddafi. They'll also need assistance, and obviously the frozen funds won't go that far. But they
No, they'll need a lot of funds for a long time. Right. They need a lot of technical assistance. They'll need assistance in being able, shall we say, to reestablish a government that has not been functioning in any real sense for 30 years.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Jamshid Choksi.
Great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello again. I'm Ian Masters. I'm just speaking then with Jamshid Choksi, who is Professor of Central Eurasian International and Islamic Studies and is a former director of the Middle East Studies Program at Indiana University. He and his wife, Carol Choksi, recently published an essay in Small Wars Journal called Libya's Rebel Leaders and Western Assistance. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how and corporate America gets away with not paying taxes.